You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
I think you'd agree that each of us has our own particular relationship with money. Some want as much of it as possible. Others prefer to live simply on minimal resources. Perhaps most of us fall somewhere in the middle. Most people find dealing with personal finance a chore, or even are fearful of finding out that there's just not enough money in the bank to cover the bills for the month. And no matter what the case is, learning the basics of money management will certainly help us so that we learn how to make things happen. And joining us this evening, it is Tsongai. Good evening, Tsongai.
Good evening, Tapelo. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. And yourself?
I am fantabulous.
It sounds like you're on top of the world.
I am.
Ooh.
When you've got enough dollars in your bank account,
let's end this. Let's end this conversation because you've just placed the bar too high, eh?
Well, we are talking about money, right? So yeah,
I love that. I love that. When you talk about money, we must not be shy to, you know, acknowledge that we've made a couple of dollars for the day, and that's
and
a good
know,
thing.
I believe in an attitude of gratitude.
Yes.
If God says, give and it will be given unto you. Mm. Good measure, pressed down,
shaken together,
running over.
You must
not be ashamed to testify.
Exactly. Love that for me and you. Yes, Kingi. Love it. You've just given me encouragement as well. So thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it. And did you have a good day, though?
I had a fantastic day. Busy. That's good.
That's nice. I actually have a love-hate relationship with Mondays. So, yeah. I always have to think twice in the morning when it's a Monday. I don't know why. But other days, I'm fine.
So, you know what I learned?
Mm.
The Word of God, you know, says that whatsoever a man thinketh, so is he. So, if you think that you've got a love-hate relationship, guess what? Every Monday,
it's gonna be
you'll be reminded. But if you speak those things that are not as though they are, then they will be. So if you just tell yourself, I'm going to have a great Monday, guess what? The great Monday will come to pass.
Yeah. You've just rebuked me and I accept the rebuke.
Well, I wasn't here to rebuke Monday blues. I was here to rebuke money issues.
So here's a beautiful comment coming through from Amanda. We haven't even started, but you've already encouraged people like myself and Amanda, and I know a lot of others as well. So Amanda saying, even me, Lord, please give me money so I can declare like my sister, please. So you see what you've done there. Tsongai. I'm also joining Amanda. I'm saying, Lord, you know, the other day, Tsongai, just to share with you a little bit about that bit as well. I said to God, just a couple of billions, man, not even millions, billions. I want God to try me. Try me. That would be nice.
So I've actually got a response for you.
Okay.
To him whom much is given,
much is expected.
And I always say, if you become a good steward of what God has given you, the billions will come. And I will quote, not word for word, I'll just paraphrase, that parable about the talent.
Yeah.
The one got five, the other got two, the other got one.
Yeah.
The one who got five, what happened? He managed those five, managed to double it.
Yes.
The one who had two, he managed to multiply it, got it to become four.
Yeah.
And the one who had one, put it under the mattress or hid it in the soil, whichever version you are reading. And guess what? The master then said, take it away from him and give it to him who actually had five.
Yeah.
Okay. So sometimes you don't get more because you have not yet demonstrated that you are a steward who can multiply that which you already have.
Silent.
So if you don't see the billions coming, just ask yourself, where am I supposed to be a little bit more resourceful with what I have?
Mm.
And I think it fits in beautifully to what we're actually talking about today in terms of money management. Because what I found is that a lot of people do come into money.
Mm.
It's not a money problem that they have.
Mm.
It's a problem of keeping the money that they get, that they have.
It's a problem of keeping the money.
You've already been given 5 talents.
Yeah.
You have to now ask yourself, how do I make these talents become 8 talents, grow them to 9 talents, grow them to 10 talents.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you can actually demonstrate how well you can multiply, you can reproduce, I promise you, you will see the money coming to you. And it's actually amazing. I'm even getting this revelation as I speak.
Okay.
That, you know what, in the financial world, right? The asset managers that get the most money are the ones that are actually showing the most growth on their money. Because people are after what we call return on investment.
Yes.
So if I give you R1 million to invest and you are able to deliver 10%, but the guy next door is able to deliver 30%, where am I going to put my money?
Yes.
Where I'm getting 30%? Because the principle is universal. The principle of the multiplication is universal. So if you cannot yet demonstrate that you can make R1 million grow by 30%, guess what? People will not really bring their resources. But the moment you use your talents, your gifts, you're using what you already have to keep on making it multiply, multiply, multiply. You won't even have to look for money. Money will look for you.
That's a nice life problem. When money starts looking for you, you realize, hey, I've arrived. You know, I've gotten to a place in life where
it will find you. Like GPS locate tapelo.
Hey, Bona. Yeah, exactly. That's where it should be. I receive. And like they say, go deeper, Papa. So I receive and you're gonna go deeper.
Now you're making me laugh again. But that's the thing. I always say, when we talk about money, people should have fun.
Yeah,
it's not supposed to be a convoluted, complicated topic that makes people palpitate and sweat.
Yeah.
Let's have fun talking about this topic.
Definitely. Yeah? Definitely. And I think that some of us who are in the finance world, you know, we make these things very complicated at times. And it's conversations like this that I really enjoy because we try and avoid the jargon and all these complications that come with, you know, being in the financial space, and you try and bring it down. Talking about going deeper, a little bit about yourself, you know, to some of our listeners, so that at least they know we are talking to someone who knows what she's talking about.
Thank you, thank you. Where do I even start?
At the beginning.
I'm a certified financial planner by profession. I also run a financial advisor and wealth creation company.
Oh, nice.
IWCP Preventus. We're based out of Johannesburg.
Yeah.
I was voted top entrepreneur of the year last year.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
For the work that I'm doing.
Yes.
And I was a finalist recently in the Women in Financial Services Making Impact at the Women of Stature Awards. And I mean, I could go on and on. I have been featured on several TV platforms, on radio platforms, because of what I am passionate of. I'm really passionate about helping moms, helping people make better financial decisions with the bottom line of creating sustainable generational wealth. I would so love, Tapelo, that your children's children say there was Ubaba and he set us up. How nice would that, feel when you are in heaven?
That would be really nice. That was really, really nice. And you remind me of, thank you so much for that introduction. And I think, man, there's lots we could go into there, but really appreciate that. But that point that you're making, they reminded me of one guest that we once had, and he said that trust fund babies are born retired. I was like, sure, that's deep.
Very, very.
Like, that's really
it's a reality.
Deep. Yeah.
And that's the reality we can all create for ourselves.
Yes.
And I say, and I want to bring in the topic of investing quickly here, because you have the opportunity to create future trust fund babies.
Hey.
And the quickest and simplest way you can actually do that is to take out a life policy, guys.
Yes, definitely.
Life policies instead of funeral policies, which means we have to move from the short-termism of having a fantastic funeral with 7 colors, put DJ's boo, and whoever else you might want there that you've put into your will, to actually creating wealth for other generations. And the quickest most effective way to do it, which is a deferred investment, is through life cover.
Yeah.
So if you take out a funeral cover, it's going to be 30,000, 50,000 max.
And then it's gone.
You get 100,000, you are even lucky. You get a tombstone, you get airtime, or those that are left behind will be able to buy a tombstone, buy airtime, and a few groceries. And we find ourselves with 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 policies.
Yeah.
But honestly, how many tombstones do you need?
Yeah.
You only need one.
Yeah.
Meaning that one policy is more than sufficient.
Mm.
And then, once you've canceled all these other funeral policies, take that money, invest in a life cover, invest in a life policy.
Yeah.
Because for about 250 rand, you can actually get a million rand worth of life cover if you're a female between 30 and 35. So imagine what a million rand can actually do for your entire lineage. Not even just your family, your entire lineage, and how it could change their trajectory. And if you calculate what that million can do, it can literally transform lives. That's why I call it a deferred investment.
Yeah.
Not an investment you're going to enjoy necessarily, but I promise you it will set up your generations and the generations to come to actually be retired even before they're born.
Sure, that's really beautiful there. And someone saying, "Hi, Bo, I can already feel my credit score going up." So you see now, we're on the right path. People's credit scores are going up already. We are on the right path. Now, as we were talking, as we were thinking about just this topic, you know, one of the things that I think is quite prevalent, right, or prevalent as some people would like to call it, amongst many of us is, you know, from the 25th to the 25th, it's like it's the longest days ever. There's, how do they say it in the finance world? There's more month than money in a month, you know, between the 25th of this month and the 25th of next month and all those sort of stuff. And a lot of us are entangled in that particular, you know, cycle every month where from the 25th you get paid. But from the following day, 26th, there's no money waiting for the 25th. We're already waiting for the 25th of May, by the way, as we speak to you right now. So please, please help us, an antidote of some sort on what are some of the basic lessons that can help us to manage, you, of course, the 25th this month and the next coming 25th of May, because it may seem like it's a very long time.
The interesting thing is people can survive from the 30th to the 25th, which is actually 20 days, with very little income.
Okay.
Meaning that it is possible.
Yes.
Okay, we just need to flip this thing on its head. One of the things I always advocate to my clients is do an honest money management review. What does this mean? You take 3 months worth of bank statements, okay? Get some beautiful colored highlighters and start to actually understand where are you allocating money on a monthly basis. I had the one client who literally highlighted and found out that they were contributing between 3,000 and 5,000 unconsciously towards family and friends. So this brother just says, "Oh, please send me 100 rand.
Yes.
And then that cousin says, "Oh, please send me 200 rand.
Yes.
And unconsciously, they were not aware that it was accumulating to between 3 and 5,000 rand every month until we did this very exercise. The other things that normally fall through the cracks are things like subscriptions. Just recently, I also had someone who thought their subscriptions were like 300 rand.
Yeah.
After we did the exercise, they realized that they're almost 2,500 worth of subscriptions. So it's what I call leakage. All right. These are expenses we incur, but we're not conscious that we're actually spending this much on these luxuries. Then another important thing is debt management. A lot of people tend to use debt to facilitate the lack of money between the 30th and the 24th or the 21st. So they go into debt. And for me, debt is a perpetual cycle of wealth destruction. So not wealth creation, but wealth destruction. Because you are paying someone else for their capital. And literally every time you pay back, you're paying a fraction of what it is that you owe. So literally that scripture in the Bible says that the borrower is the slave to the lender, becomes your reality. So try and get rid of debt as quickly as possible. trim out on any unnecessary expenses, and you'll realize that if you're conscientious about doing it over a 6 to 12 month period, your story will turn. Another thing that I find people can watch out for is when they get bonuses. Use your bonus to kill off debt. Use your bonus to kill off debt. When you get a salary increase, don't now apply to move out of Sunning Hill and go to Branston or to Sandton. It's okay. Maintain the same lifestyle and use that increase to attack your debt. All right? Use the increase to attack your debt. Another thing that I observe that I can probably give as a free tip is if you're in a stock sale and you still have debt, please, please, once it's your round, up you go, please. Because for me, it doesn't make sense that you're putting aside maybe 3,000 Rand towards a stock sale that doesn't give you any interest in terms of the return on your capital, and yet you're accumulating interest at 27.5% on your Markham account or your Foschini account or your Truworths account. Again, it makes no sense. So rather exit from the stock sale for now. Use that capital to kill off your debt. And then at a time that is suitable, you can probably then re-engage or find better yielding investments.
That's lovely. Without necessarily, you know, panting a little bit more on the stock sale thing, just touching a little bit of on it, because some people use it as a means to generate revenue, right? And it's an age-old practice that we've done, especially as the people of color as well. So how do we, what is the one thing to run away from a stock sale? Because I find that these stock sales end up becoming cumbersome in themselves, because even the money that when it comes to us, we find ourselves having to patch here and there. You know, there's always this big hole that's always been put. You take that money and you close on that debt or close it, but you're still back to square one at the end of the day.
Yeah. So remember, stock falls are more a societal norm. Okay. So it's not really about the savings. The savings is a byproduct of that social norm of togetherness, that ubuntu that comes out from working together, doing things together. So whilst the savings is amazing, others actually love it for the community built around them. The support it buys them or gives them access to. So I'm always very cautious, because I know that stock sales are more than just the financial transaction in that group. But if you find yourself struggling month in, month out, and you're part of one, and you've got debt, then for me, it doesn't make sense, because you are not getting any sort of interest income, any dividend income, or any rental income from the money you're putting into your stock. So it's not growing in any shape or form. So yes, your heart is full, but your pocket is empty. So rather, take that capital, use it to pay off debt, because that debt is actually more expensive than the monetary value or additional gain you're getting from that money going to the stock sale. So like I said, your store loan accounts, your furniture accounts tend to charge anything between 15% and 27.5% in interest. So you're competing with capital that can be better allocated in a place of gradual debt reduction. So then it makes more sense to put that capital there, because it's serving you in a much better place with saving you that interest over time. Whereas in the stock sale, you get your capital, but guess what? Inflation has run away with you anyway. So doesn't make much.
And I think that's been one of the biggest downfall of stock sales, right, over the years, even though I think that perhaps they are changing a little bit now because of the realization of things like the opportunity cost, you know, that comes with just putting aside money. There's interest that it's losing and all that. And I think these stock funds that are being run and managed by young people, I think are kind of becoming much better than what stock funds used to be in the olden days. But I really love that point that you made there, that, you know, you are actually destroying your wealth creation. You know, you are destroying your wealth creation by actually putting money in the stock fund that doesn't really grow. And you find that a lot of the times we pay Peter to pay Paul, right? We borrow from Peter to pay Paul, even in the stock funds themselves. Because now you've got this huge obligation that's sitting in front, on top of you, that every month you need to contribute because the other round was you. So now you must pay everyone else that comes after that. But I wanted us to just touch on that a little bit, because I find that we think it's the solution to some of the financial problems that you have. It has its good side, you know, but there's also the bad side if we don't do this thing in a manner that does make sense. I love the point that you made about trimming unnecessary expenses. Now, here's a comment that came through. And I think particularly if you can marry it to that, because that's, I think that's what you're talking about there, when it says, what if you've got family? How do you go about trimming your expenses when there's a family that's sitting in front of you that, of course, expects this and that and that, particularly not even your extended family, but your very, very immediate family? Do you need to have them around the table and say, well, I've realized that the past 6 months we're spending a little bit of money on the coffee and on the tea, on that. These things are unnecessary. From now on, we're not going to do them because I'm saving a potential 2,000 if I don't.
And that's such a beautiful question, and it's a conundrum, especially in our communities where there's a lot of talk about black tax.
Mm.
In the other cultures, they call it caregiver syndrome.
Mm.
But wherever you are, there's this unspoken expectation that if you've got parents, if you've got family that looks after you at some point, you actually need to then sow backwards.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big, big thing, because we're sowing backwards instead of forwards.
Eish. Eish. Okay?
Even the farmers, when they throw their seeds,
yeah.
I've never seen a farmer who throws his seeds backwards.
Yes.
They always throw their seeds forward.
Yeah.
So I think it's a question of how do you balance putting seed at the back, but also making sure that you've got enough of a harvest in front of you. Okay? Because we also can't leave the people behind, all right? Because we've got a societal obligation and a cultural obligation, but at the same time, we need to be mindful that if we do not do something differently, we shall just perpetuate the problem.
Yes.
10 years, 5 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years from now.
Yes.
So what I tend to suggest to my clients, and I actually have a course where we coach individuals on this, is you need to have that family in Daba.
Family in Daba,
where you set the record straight.
Yeah.
You set the record straight. If it's your immediate family, okay, you literally have a conversation.
Yeah.
We're trying to get out of debt.
Mm.
And because we're trying to get out of debt, we have to reduce some of our expenses for starters.
Yes.
We won't be able to go out every single Friday or every single Sunday.
Yeah.
We will now only go out once a month.
Yes.
Instead of buying the high-end coffee, all right, Jacob, we will now be drinking Nescafe, I think it is, or Ricoffee, all right?
Mm.
Or even no coffee, for that matter
of
fact.
Simple water.
Is a safe option,
exactly.
And it's a healthy option,
okay?
If you were going for wholes in terms of juices, now we're going for oros. So there are always alternatives that are economic to the pocket that you can always consider. So that's one thing you can do, reducing your expenses, A, and B, making sure that you look for more economic alternatives.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
And it's about lifestyle changes as well.
Yeah.
Instead of going for a movie, you can decide to take a walk with your family.
Yeesh.
Very healthy, but cost effective. All right? Instead of going to a paid park, as an example, you can go to a local park where your kids can actually enjoy themselves, but without necessarily having to break the bank. So you actually have to be quite creative, and there are a lot of things that you can do to reduce your expenditure, especially on what I call lifestyle things.
Yeah.
So the first thing is reduce consumption.
Yeah.
Then the second thing you want to do then increase income.
Yes.
And the beautiful thing about increasing income or having multiple streams of income is that everyone in the family can actually participate and be involved.
Yes.
There are certain things, if you go onto platforms like Freelance, or you go onto platforms like Jam, where even your kids can find very, very simple jobs they can do to earn an income. For example, dog walking, home sitting, so everyone can actually be a part in contributing to the family economy, as I would call it.
Yeah.
So there is ways to do it, but I think the important thing is to communicate, to be transparent, and to get everyone involved. And if you want to, every meeting, every month, you can have a check-in meeting to say, okay, this is where we started, this is the progress we've made. So that, again, people feel like you're making progress. They can celebrate a win at the end of each month and actually realize that the sacrifices are doing something. But most importantly, if you are transparent to your immediate family about finances, you're also teaching them how to become better stewards of their money. Okay. We can't just abdicate this responsibility to the educational system, but we as family, as parents, we need to take that responsibility to educate our families on how to be better stewards of money, how to make better use of money and make it grow and work for us.
Someone's saying she's speaking life to me. So thank you for that. That's a beautiful comment.
I love it. I love it.
I love it too. I love also the concept of a family in depth. And I'm actually thinking in my mind, you can make it even more spicier, and no pun intended there. But you can even make it more spicier by having the children just co-chair some of the meetings, you know, and like, today is your turn to co-chair. Let's put the budget here and all that. And I'm saying this because I recently spoke to a friend, and she was talking about how, for example, they've allowed their child to go and do groceries. And, you know, of course, not necessarily give the child the entire budget, but the portion of the budget to say, okay, this is the portion of the budget. Go and make, you know, groceries for this month, and let's see what you can come up with. Oh, apparently, the child came back and said, "Ha, kanti ukudla kudura kanje," you know. So they now have a view of how important and how expensive food is. Right, important in the sense that there's no wastage now, because they understand just how expensive food is. But also there's now a little bit of a consciousness around how they use food, you know, not letting it spoil unnecessarily and all that. Because now she went out with that 500 rand and said, okay, I'm supposed to buy food for the family. And she has to think, hey, there's five people in this family, so is this a loaf of bread going to be enough? If it's not enough, what's the alternative, you know? Or look
and
at this particular...
And you start asking yourself blue ribbon.
Exactly. That's what I was about to say. You start start looking at alternatives. You say, hey, man, this one looks really expensive. How about we try that one, you know? So almost inculcating in them exactly what you're saying, so that they also learn about money. And we have this indaba. And when we sit and have this indaba, she can contribute and say, hey, no, wait, that one, not this month, because, wow, I saw that. Mm-hmm. You know what? Yeah. That thing is really, really expensive.
And it's such a beautiful thing you raised.
You know? Yeah.
It's about teaching our children to become financially responsible.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no better way than to give them responsibility. Whether it's through simple things like doing chores, for them to realize that money actually comes as a result of an exchange of value.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It doesn't come because I ask mommy for it.
Yeah.
Because there's an exchange. I created value to the home economy. And as a result, I actually get rewarded for it.
Yeah.
Same thing. You must allocate some money for them to go out there and do groceries so that they actually understand, hey, do I buy granny apples or do I buy crisp apples?
Yeah. Which one is it? and you know, being Christian, you have to also balance it with healthier food choices. So that doesn't always come cheap. But you know, they learn these very important things.
It's funny you mentioned that because I read someone's comment the other day that eating healthy is like a vicious attack on my wallet.
It's a very vicious one, I must say. Very true, but hey, it's a very tough one to traverse. Now, I want us then to move towards the end with this particular one. Let's be honest, though, Bernard Tsunga, is it not that the salary is not enough? Because, we do this budgeting, and you try and, you know, spend responsibly. But hey, the 25th to the 25th or 15th to the 50th, it just never seems like it's enough. Is it not the salary, Gatle, that's the problem here?
For me, I wouldn't say it's the salary. It's an opportunity.
Okay.
If you actually feel like your salary is not enough, that is actually an opportunity to find which talent could I be better utilizing.
Okay.
Because your 8 to 5 is probably 1 or 2 talents, and you've already reached the max in terms of what that specific one can actually give back.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
So same thing I mentioned earlier on, if you were given 5 talents, ask yourself, how many of those am I seriously monetizing? How many of them have I made bankable? I.e., I am exchanging those talents, right? Because we said money is an exchange of value. I'm exchanging my talents for enough value. I'm exchanging my talents for enough value. But it also requires introspection to say, of the talents I have, am I utilizing all of them maximally? Because you realize that maybe you're only spending 1 or 2, using 1 or 2. And it might be an opportunity for you to actually find out, which other ones do I have that I can also be monetized? Like I said, there are platforms like Freelance, like Upwork, where you can literally find jobs depending on your skill set, depending on your talent, depending on what you're good at. There are other gigs you can start to take on for additional income. There are quite a number of forums that you can also get onto to do things like copywriting or transcribing. There are some where literally you can be watching things to review so that they get real-time feedback, all right? There are certain websites where you can test their websites for them in order for you to generate additional income. So it comes back to, where do you see the opportunity? Where could you be utilizing your skill set, your talents, generate additional streams of income for you? And I always say, you know what? That story about the Shunammite woman who was asked, what do you have? And she said, I only have a little flour and a little oil will bake our last bread, and me and my son will die. But they were asked, what do you have? We all have something. Now, when we put it to God, guess what? He can actually transform it, multiply it, and cause it to run over and overflow. But the question is, introspect and ask yourself, what do you have? You'll be surprised how much you have, that if you start utilizing it effectively, the return on investment will blow your mind.
Sure, that's beautiful. Where do I start then?
I thought we're at the end.
So I look at my talents, I look at what else am I monetizing and not monetizing. But where do I start? Because it can feel very overwhelming doing all of these things. Do I start by, I don't know, trialing it out and getting a few of my family members saying, okay, it seems like you're good at this, you know, you can continue. Where do I, because I think I want to make it really, really that rudimentary and elementary for our listeners as well, so that they can go up and say, okay, I'm going to start now.
That's a fantastic question you ask. So I always say, what is that thing you're always giving for free? Is it advice? Is it cookies? Is it help? What is it that you're always giving? Or what is it that people come to you usually? Because quite interestingly, our talents are hidden from us in plain sight because it's so natural to us. So you can ask yourself that introspective question. What do I normally give for free? What do most people come to me for? Or the other way you can do it is, what do you think I'm good at? So you go out to your closest friends, your closest family, and you ask them, what do you genuinely think I'm good at? What do you think I excel at? Because sometimes the things we're actually good at, because they come so naturally to us, we actually think everyone has it. We actually think everyone does it. And I was quite amazed because I did the same exercise. And today I'm speaking on platforms. I'm an MC. I'm a director of ceremony. Because I used to do this so naturally for me. I didn't even see the opportunity to monetize. You know, when you're at the family gathering and say, everyone, give her the mic. Give her the mic.
She can talk
that
one.
And you're flowing and people are happy. People are enjoying. And then you actually ask yourself, but this is a gift.
Mm.
I could show up and get paid 50,000 rand a night for this gift.
Mm.
Okay? So you ask yourself, what is it that I am good at?
Mm.
What do people come to me for?
Mm.
And then you need to package it to solve a particular problem.
Yeah.
And I think this is where sometimes you get it wrong.
Yeah.
You're good at it, but you don't know how to then package it so that it solves a particular problem or a particular pain point.
Yeah.
So for me, when I think of my gift, which is being able to speak, the pain point people have is in wealth creation.
Mm.
So for me, I speak on wealth creation.
Mm. Sure. That's beautiful. Really, really loved that. And I hope now we've got a step one. You know, we can go to friends and say, what is it that you think I'm really good at? And then we can use that and go forward. Any last words there? Now, of course, time is the biggest enemy.
Actually, in my world, time is the best acquaintance, because the time value of money makes your money grow like there's no tomorrow.
Look at that. I love that. I love that. Thank you so much, man.
So in parting, I think if you've got any questions, if you need help, please, guys, feel free to shout. My number is 073-519-2358.
Yeah.
And never put for tomorrow what you can do today.
Ah, never put for tomorrow what you can do today. Someone saying, wow. Wow. So that's really beautiful there. And someone saying, Tapelo, please don't get any ideas. Your reward is in heaven. They don't want me to monetize. They don't want me to monetize on my own talents. I matter some people.
My goodness. Okay.
Thank you so much.
I've been left speechless by that comment.
But thank you so much, ma'am. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you so much, Tatello. Have a lovely evening.
You too.
Your wonderful listeners.
Enjoy. Bye-bye.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.